Wednesday, February 23rd, 2022. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is off to a good start. Hope you, your family, your friends, you're all doing well at this time. I know that in sports, we've talked about it here on the Dose before. We have really, really short memories. But to be fair, it isn't always just about our short memories in sports. Because sometimes in sports, it is because sports are loved by the youth, right? I mean, young people love watching sports. You can go get a little kid, 5, 6 years old. They love watching their sports. They have their favorite teams. They have their favorite athletes. They have their favorite coaches. They love sports. They're all in on it. And so while a lot of it is we have short memories, a lot of things in sports are because youth are what watches sports. Youth is what is involved in sports. And of course, in this day, youth is who is talking about sports. I mean, if you talk to a 10, 12-year-old kid right now, Ja Morant is the greatest player in NBA history, right? Now, is he? Probably not. But they haven't seen anything else. So what else do they know? That's all they've ever seen. Now, I've told you before, I get tired of the this is the greatest, you know, player, team, coach, whatever arguments. I have people that I kind of put up in that Mount Rushmore area, and then we can kind of debate it. But I would rather look at comparables to former era players than just say, hey, this player is better than that player. I mean, right now, we have so many people comparing LeBron to Michael Jordan. LeBron isn't Michael. He doesn't even play like Michael. LeBron is more Magic than he will ever be Michael Jordan. That's just not really a fair comparison to either player, because that's not who he is. If you look at the NFL, so a lot of people that might look at like Josh Allen or Justin Herbert and say, hey, maybe they'll be the next Tom Brady. Well, they don't play anything like Tom Brady. They play more like John Elway than they do Tom Brady. But I want you to think about this year in the NFL. What did we see take place in the NFL? Of course, we saw the Los Angeles Rams win the Super Bowl. But specifically, what did we see? We saw a little bit of a slower, white, wide receiver that completely dominated the game. Los Angeles Rams wide receiver Cooper Kupp was amazing this year. Think about what Cooper Kupp did this year. He won the receiving triple crown. That is leading in receptions, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns. He was the offensive player of the year, and he was the Super Bowl MVP. That's unreal. Cooper Kupp is so smart, and he's athletic enough. He finds gaps in the defense. He will make you pay for him when he does. And he can tie a much more athletic defensive back into knots because of his precision, because of his route running, because of his intelligence. We have never seen anything like Cooper Kupp before, right? Well, except we kind of have. In fact, we kind of have a few times. I mean, we could go back to Don Hutson. We could go back to like Steve Largent. But today, we have someone who was born on this day who is very similar to Cooper Kupp. Because born on this day, February 23rd, back in 1943 in Erie, Pennsylvania, we had a man named Fred Biletnikoff born. Biletnikoff actually turns 79 today. But I want you to think about Fred Biletnikoff, and if you haven't ever seen him play, you didn't see him play, maybe you're too young, I would encourage you, go find those YouTube clips. Because Fred Biletnikoff was slow, he was white, he was somehow like a hippie, like he had long hair, but at the same time, he was also balding. I don't know how that exactly works together, where you're a hippie, but also kind of a bald-headed hippie at the same time. Kind of an odd situation there. He partied. He smoked. I believe you can find clips of Fred Biletnikoff smoking on the sideline. He drank. He partied hard. And you know what? He also got open, and he caught everything near him. Fred Biletnikoff played 14 seasons in the NFL with the Oakland Raiders. He caught 589 passes. He had 76 touchdowns. In an era when you could rip his helmet off, you could hit him in the face, you could dive at his knees, you could just abuse him all over the field. It wasn't the era like we see now. And Biletnikoff somehow always found ways to get open against much faster guys. Fred Biletnikoff left the NFL as the all-time leader in postseason receptions, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns. He played in 19 postseason games. And in the postseason, Fred Biletnikoff recorded over 100 receiving yards five different times. In 1976 in Super Bowl XI, Fred Biletnikoff was also named Super Bowl MVP, just like Cooper Kupp, as the Raiders blew out the Vikings in Super Bowl XI. Hey, happy birthday to Fred Biletnikoff today, a guy that was Cooper Kupp before anyone ever dreamed of Cooper Kupp. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show and maybe tell us your favorite, I don't know, slow wide receiver of all time, hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at @dailydosports. If you've got a question, you've got a comment, maybe you have a trivia question for us. We have heard a number of them lately. We would love to hear what you have to say. Also, be sure you're stopping by dailydosports.com a few times a week. Check out some of the new things going on over there every week. I am releasing a Daily Doses on Tuesdays. This past week, talked a little bit about the Denver Nuggets. And then our featured columnist, Young Jimmy, is posting a new article on Thursdays. And this last week, he talked a little bit about Cincinnati Bengals cornerback Eli Apple and all the grief that he has been talking. But you can always find a link to the podcast. You can always find a link to the YouTube video. A number of things going on over at DailyDoseSports.com. Make sure you are stopping by there a few times during the week. And as long as we are all doing that online shopping, you know you need some Daily Dose gear in your life. What better way to let everyone know that you listen to the podcast that deals in common sense? But stop by tpublic.com and you can find a number of different designs over there. We've got a few Daily Dose designs over there to choose from. And if you're picking a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, a hoodie, you can pick it in whatever color that you want. TeePublic is always doing a number of sales. They will get the merchandise to you as quickly as possible. So be sure you stop by TeePublic.com, search Daily Dose, and get exactly what you need. Hey, today on the show, we are going to take a look back at the 2021 NFL season now that it is fully complete, and we're going to be handing out a few season-end awards. We are going to have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you today as well. The Daily Dose Top 5 is actually had a few weeks off lately, but it's going to make a return today. But before we get to any of those things, let's look at a few news stories coming out over the past week. And let's start off in college football, where after checking out every other possible job opportunity there was, Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh announced, well, I guess I'll just come back to Ann Arbor. And he will be returning to Michigan with a big, fat, new contract. Jim Harbaugh is scheduled to receive at least $41.68 million over the next 5 years. If he completes that contract, I want to think about this for a second. I was told when I started the Dose there would be no math, but let me figure this out. 41.68, carry the two. Yeah, that comes out to about $8 million per loss to Ohio State. Hey, not bad work if you can get it, honestly. I would lose to Ohio State for that. I would have no problem whatsoever with that. I wonder, though, do you think Michigan fans are happy about his return? Because we all know Jim Harbaugh was trying to leave. He was interviewing for every job that was out there. He was trying to go to the NFL. But are the Maize and Blue happy to have him back? Because it wasn't really like a, I'm coming back because I love you. It was, I'm coming back because there are no other jobs. I just wonder if Michigan is happy to get Jim Harbaugh back. I'll tell you who is happy. I know who is happy. Ohio State is real happy about Jim Harbaugh coming back. I will promise you that. It was also announced last week that the powers that be in college football are too stupid to make more money for themselves. The college football playoff, they say, will stay at four teams until at least 2025. For more than 8 months, leaders of the college football playoff have been unable to unanimously agree on what the postseason should change to. Last week, they finally just agreed to disagree and said, well, we're just going to stay with four teams until this contract runs out, and then we'll, I don't know, figure something else out. But that now ends all speculation about whether the playoff would expand before the contract would expire, because the school presidents and chancellors who have the authority to do this basically couldn't come up with an agreement, which is really, really dumb. So now there are still 2 years remaining on the current deal, and the vote to change it had to be unanimous, and it wasn't. But here's the thing I want you to keep in mind, because I really thought it would go. I thought it would change. I thought there would be enough people in the room say, hey, we're basically printing money. Let's take it. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there that just kind of want to disagree with everything. But, you know, as soon as these idiots that were in these board meetings come to the realization that they are just flushing money down the toilet, and as soon as these universities start to feel the squeeze of COVID and how much that has cost them, trust me, they're going to have another vote. This is just a matter of time because fans want it. TV networks will pay for it. It is coming. These morons are just too dumb to come to an agreement in the boardroom. But trust me, it is coming. Also, after just one season of college athletes being allowed to profit off their name, image, and likeness, the NCAA announced last Friday they are going to begin a review of those NIL policies. They say they will review how policies, or the lack thereof, have affected athletes' school of choice, transfer opportunities, and their academics and mental health. According to the NCAA board, they will continue to investigate any violations that may have occurred of NCAA rules, including like pay for play or recruiting inducements. Now, let me break this down real simple for you. The NCAA has zero power whatsoever, but they're still trying to act like they do. So let's say they find major infractions. Let's say they find out, Alabama paid a bunch of kids to come to their school. What will they do? Nothing. I mean, this is just more silly, meaningless nonsense by old guys that want to act like they're important when in fact we all know you have no importance whatsoever. You don't do anything. You're the NCAA. You used to get on like coaches for getting a bagel for a prospective player. Now you're acting like, hey, we're going to look into this NIL stuff and see if you guys are recruiting illegally. Yeah, who cares if we are? What are you going to do about it? You have no authority whatsoever. They're not going to do nothing. More stupidity from the NCAA. Staying in college sports, but moving over to college basketball, Michigan men's head basketball coach Juwan Howard will be suspended 5 games, which is basically just the rest of the season, for the Michigan Wolverines. They say that hefty fines are also expected for Juwan Howard after an altercation after a loss on Sunday to Wisconsin. Now, if you didn't see it, after Michigan had lost to Wisconsin, as they're going through the handshaking line, Wisconsin head coach Greg Gard stopped Juwan Howard in the handshaking line, grabbed him by the arm, the two kind of exchanged words, then Howard put his finger in Gard's face. An assistant coach of guards stepped up and exchanged words with Howard as well. The teams both kind of came together, and then Juwan Howard reached over. Now, they're saying he punched the assistant coach. He didn't punch him. He kind of slapped at him, like open hand slap, whatever. You hit another coach of an opposing program. You can't do that, Juwan. I know you got away with nonsense back when you were a member of the Fab Five, but you're not going to get away with that now. Now, here's the problem for Juwan Howard. His season isn't going so well. After such a promising year last year, Juwan Howard's team is sitting at 7th place in the Big Ten right now. Here's the thing for Michigan. They will put him on suspension right now, and they're going to tell him, hey, you might want to rethink how things are going, because this might be the beginning of the end for you. Juwan Howard needs to figure out how to start winning games. Hey, you can slap all the coaches you want, but you better be winning, because right now, if Michigan is in 1st or 2nd or even 3rd in the Big Ten, I bet he gets suspended like 1 game tops. Oh, you're sitting back at 7th place in the Big Ten? No, we're going to sit you down for the rest of the regular season. And let this be noticed to you that you better get this figured out. And you better get it figured out quickly. I don't know if you watched them at all. I'll admit to you, I watched far too much of them. But the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics are now complete. Did you watch any Olympics whatsoever? Norway actually led the medal count with 37, followed by Russia, Germany, Canada, and then the United States. If you did miss them, and based on the TV numbers, You definitely miss him.
Hey, in case you haven't noticed, and judging by the attendance, you haven't.
Let me catch you up, because let me explain a little bit of my personal situation. I am not a huge fan of the Winter Olympics. My wife is a huge fan of any Olympic anything. So she watched every single second of it. So it was on at my house. I wouldn't say I necessarily watched it all the time, but let me catch you up if you missed the Winter Olympics. Let's see. The Chinese cheated a lot. They had a lot of cheating going on. The Russians cheated a lot. We saw some drugs and some things going on there with the Russians. The Norwegians just dominated pretty much anything and everything. I've decided if you put a sport on ice or like a slide, Norway's going to be pretty good. And the Americans pretty much underachieved. Some of the people we thought, hey, they have a chance to really do some things here at the Winter Olympics. They didn't really do much of anything. So there's your Winter Olympic recap. I hope it was good for you. Moving over to the NBA, we also had the NBA All-Star Weekend take place this past weekend in Cleveland. And I'll be honest, I watched it. It was mostly a giant snooze fest. Minnesota Timberwolves big man Karl-Anthony Towns won the three-point contest. So there's that. The New York Knicks' Obi Toppin won the dunk contest. And if you didn't see that, his winning dunk, I'm going to be honest, it might be the worst winning dunk I've ever seen. He barely got the ball over the rim. It is layup-ish. He kind of batted the ball over the rim. He didn't really dunk it. So I don't know how that rates into the whole thing. Fortunately, Steph Curry and LeBron James basically saved the weekend. Steph, by shooting the lights out in the All-Star game itself, Steph Curry hits 16 three-pointers. He went for 50, while LeBron James hit the game-winning shot at the end of the All-Star game itself. But, you know, it wasn't just the All-Star game that LeBron made some noise with, because he did hit the game-winning shot. It was also what LeBron said over the weekend that I thought was really interesting. Because LeBron James said the door is not closed on a potential return to the Cleveland Cavaliers, and that his last season in the league, he wants to play with his son. Of course, we know his son Bronny is only 17. He's still in high school. But I want to think about those two statements. One, LeBron hinted that maybe he'd go back to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Think about this for a second. We're going to talk a little bit more in just 1 minute about this, but the Los Angeles Lakers are really struggling. The Cleveland Cavaliers are doing pretty well. Of course, LeBron now wants to go back to Cleveland because they're doing pretty well. He doesn't want to stay in L.A. When L.A. looked good, oh, I want to go to L.A. Oh, no, 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 I want to go back to Cleveland. Oh, I want to go down to Miami. Are you noticing a trend here? But back to LeBron playing with his son, Bronny. Remember, Bronny is only 17. He's still in high school. He won't even be eligible to play in the NBA until 2024, and that is if he's good enough to get to the NBA. But LeBron says he wants to play with him. Wouldn't you just love to see, like, I don't know, the Sacramento Kings draft Bronny, even if he's not any good, just to get LeBron to play for them? I don't know how that's going to end up, but I'm telling you this right now, I can't wait. That is going to be a lot of fun. Finally, speaking of those Los Angeles Lakers, one of the biggest stories prior to NBA All-Star Weekend was when Los Angeles Lakers big man Anthony Davis went down with that ankle injury. Now, if you didn't see it, AD comes down hard on the ankle, and then he proceeded to roll around with such enthusiasm and gusto, you would have thought his leg was being amputated without anesthesia. And as soon as I saw it, I said, there's no way that guy's hurt. There's no way. I'm telling you, he's not hurt. I'm talking to a friend, and my friend goes, did you see AD? He just went down. I bet it's broken. I go, I guarantee it isn't. He goes, no, did you see him? He's in pain. I mean, at best, it's probably like a minor break, and he's going to be out for the season. I go, there's no way. It will be sprained. Because I know, street clothes Davis is more drama than any soccer player could ever dream of being. And sure enough, the next day, it was revealed it was a sprain. It wasn't a break. It hadn't been sheared off. It was a sprain. Oh, that was shocking news, wasn't it? I called it without even seeing the MRI. It's like I'm a doctor. AD at this point should change his initials to IR. You might think that losing Anthony Davis would kill any chance for a run that the Lakers might make this year. But honestly, does it even matter at this point? LeBron has once again burned another franchise to the dirt, and we already know. He's already talking about. He's looking to leave. He wants to go somewhere else. He's already even talking about Cleveland. What's new? That is just how LeBron James seems to operate. Okay, coming back. We just witnessed one of the most entertaining NFL seasons in history. We saw crazy comebacks. We saw miracle finishes. We even had a down-to-the-wire Super Bowl. When we get back, we are going to be handing out some end-of-year awards to the most deserving NFL recipients. So right now, this time of year, we're all kind of sad because the NFL season is over. And we know maybe a couple of leagues are going to, I don't know, try to give it a go this offseason or whatever. Honestly, I hope for the best because I would love to have something to watch. But right now, we are going to hand out a few awards as we kind of look back and remember the NFL season that was 2021. What are we going to remember from this season? Of course, the Los Angeles Rams won the Super Bowl with that nasty defense and Matthew Stafford instead of Jared Goff. But what else should we remember from the season? Let's hand out our 2021 NFL Daily Dose Awards. You know, if I were going to hand out the biggest surprise of the year, who else could it possibly be? We knew the LA Rams were title or bust. We knew the Kansas City Chiefs and Buffalo Bills would be contenders. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers would be in the conversation. But even as late as like the mid-season point, who saw the Cincinnati Bengals going all the way to the Super Bowl? The Bengals were 150-1 odds to even make the Super Bowl this year. But they got hot. They had a much better than people thought defense. And quarterback Joe Burrow just seems to be mature beyond his years. Of all of the surprises we saw this year in the NFL, I cannot come up with a bigger surprise than those Cincinnati Bengals. But on the flip side of surprise of the year, who would get our vote for disappointment of the year? And I'm telling you right now, there are a number of nominees. We could go with the Baltimore Ravens. Don't forget, Baltimore finished dead last in the AFC North with an 8-9 record. Who saw that coming? I mean, we all thought the Ravens would be Super Bowl contenders. I could give my disappointment of the year to Cleveland Browns quarterback Baker Mayfield, who right now literally has people wondering, are you even a starting quarterback in the NFL? Because you don't look like one. The Seattle Seahawks went just 7-10. The Dallas Cowboys went 12-5. They were the number 3 seed in the NFC, but then they got knocked out of the playoffs by the San Francisco 49ers on Dak Prescott's bizarre scramble that ran out the clock. So there are a number of nominees for disappointment of the year in this year 2021. But I'm going to go somewhere else for my disappointment of the year. And I'll admit, I'm not the best person to judge this, but I'm going to anyways. Can you right now, Daily Dose listener, name me one single good commercial from the Super Bowl? No, you can't because it doesn't exist. Forget a really good commercial. Can you even name one commercial that you even remember? No, you can't. Because again, it doesn't exist. Super Bowl commercials this year win our disappointment of the year. I don't remember a single one. As far as I could tell, they were all really weird and really dumb. If we had to name the offensive player of the year, again, we have a number of nominees. We kind of forget it, but Tom Brady put up huge passing numbers in Tampa. He led the league in both yards and in touchdowns. We already discussed the season that Los Angeles Rams wide receiver Cooper Kupp had. He won the Triple Crown. He won the Super Bowl MVP. He was named the Offensive Player of the Year. He did it all. But here at the Dose, we do things a little bit different. I'm not going to give it to Cooper Kupp. Matthew Stafford led the Rams to the Super Bowl after coming over from Detroit. Indianapolis Colts running back Jonathan Taylor ran for 1,800 yards and 18 touchdowns, but I am going to give our Offensive Player of the Year to someone else because I'm going to give it to a guy that just created a new position. Because what in the world is San Francisco 49ers player Deebo Samuel? He's a wide receiver, right? I mean, he had 77 catches for 1,400 yards. Yeah, he is. And also, he's kind of a running back. He carried the ball 59 times for 365 yards. He had 15 total touchdowns. He even threw for a touchdown. I don't know what Deebo Samuel is, but I know this. He is a problem on every single play because the Niners give him the ball every way that they possibly can. And for that reason, I'm giving Deebo our offensive player of the year. I suppose moving over to defensive player of the year, I need to give that award to Pittsburgh Steelers pass rusher TJ Watt. I mean, Watt this year tied the single season sack record of 22 and a half sacks. He ties that with longtime giant Michael Strahan. However, let's be honest. Let's say you're the opposing team. Let's say you're the opposing offense. Let's say you're an opposing quarterback. Who would you be more afraid of? TJ Watt or Los Angeles Rams monster defensive lineman Aaron Donald? You know the answer as well as I do. Our 2021 NFL Defensive Player of the Year, Aaron Donald. TJ Watt is a great player. And I suppose in certain situations, he would be our Defensive Player of the Year. But I'd be scared to death to see Aaron Donald across from me. For that reason, we're giving it to him. Now, who should win our NFL Coach of the Year? Because there are a number of guys that are truly worthy, and even a couple guys you might not think of. Cincinnati Bengals head coach Zach Taylor. I know there are a lot of people bashing him and like, I don't know if he's really a big-time coach. I don't know if he's really one of the elite coaches. Well, he did something right. He took the Bengals to the Super Bowl. And don't forget, they were minutes away from actually pulling off the upset and winning it. So Zach Taylor deserves a few votes. Of course, Rams head coach Sean McVay won it all. But I mean, the Rams are supposed to win it all, right? They were a Super Bowl or bust team. So I'm not giving it to Sean McVay. He had all the talent. I'll tell you a name that is deserving. Should at least get a few votes. The Las Vegas Raiders made the playoffs with interim head coach Rich Bisaccia, who then didn't even get to keep his job. He was relieved of his duties after the season. But again, he obviously did something right. He got the Raiders to the playoffs. And, you know, prior to John Gruden stepping down and whatever happened there, the Raiders didn't look like a playoff team to me. So Bisaccia did something. I would think of giving him a few votes too. But of all of the top teams, you think back, the Rams, the Chiefs, the Bills, the Bengals, the Packers, the Buccaneers. Of all those teams, did anyone else lose their best player for most of the season? No, just one did. One head coach lost his best player, by far, I might add, for 9 games this season. Of those elite teams, no one else of those top teams had to deal with that, but Tennessee Titans head coach Mike Vrabel, he lost superstar running back Derrick Henry, and somehow, he still got the Titans to finish 12-5. I don't know how he did it. The rest of the roster isn't that great, but he did it for that reason. I still give our coach of the year to Mike Vrabel. Now, we'll see what he does going forward with Ryan Tannehill. How does that all work itself out? Do the Titans now go get a new quarterback? They may be shopping. I would assume they have to be. But for what he did this year, without Derrick Henry, Mike Vrabel is our coach of the year. We move next to our offensive rookie of the year. And honestly, there aren't that many good candidates to even consider here. Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase, he had 81 catches. And on 81 catches, he averaged 18 yards per catch. Kids, that is insane. That is getting into Randy Moss territory. Now, last year at the draft, the Bengals needed offensive line help. They instead drafted Ja'Marr Chase at number 5. And somehow, he proved to be a steal. I mean, so what if Joe Burrow couldn't get the ball to him on the last play of the Super Bowl? At least they made it there, right? And while that sounds like sarcasm, and some of it probably is, I really don't know that the Bengals make it as far as they did without Chase. Now, they need to shore up that offensive line, but Ja'Marr Chase was so incredibly explosive. Yeah, I think the Bengals probably did make the right choice in selecting him over what could have been a great offensive lineman. He might just be that Randy Moss kind of player. He is that good. And Ja'Marr Chase easily wins our Offensive Rookie of the Year. Moving over to the Defensive Rookie of the Year, I struggled to pick one. I know I have to go with Dallas Cowboys rookie linebacker Micah Parsons. I get it. And he looks like a star. An absolute star. But I mean, the Cowboys defense still isn't great. I know we're all looking at it this year and going, hey, they really improved. They only allowed 21 points a game this year. But in their losses, they averaged giving up 27 points per game. So when they lost, their defense gave up a lot of points. The problem with Defensive Rookie of the Year, there aren't that many other candidates out there. I mean, who else could I even go with? Pat Surtain here in Denver, I guess, was okay, but I'm a homer, and I don't even think I can give it to him. Micah Parsons, I think, is going to be a very, very talented, very, very good player for years and years to come. I will give my award to Micah Parsons, even though when I look at that Dallas defense, I'm not fully convinced that they are really all that great. Our next award is the Comeback Player of the Year. And there are actually a couple of options for Comeback Player of the Year. I'll give you one. Speaking of the Dallas Cowboys, Dallas Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott, remember, he came back from that horribly broken ankle. He led the Cowboys to a 12-5 record. Dak Prescott had 37 touchdowns this year. That's a pretty amazing comeback. At any time, that's a pretty amazing comeback. To come back from what Dak did, remember, when he first broke that ankle, there were people saying he may never play again. He came back and played really, really well. So Dak is in the running. However, apparently, what we didn't know when Dak had that ankle injury was that he also had an undiagnosed head injury that caused him to think he could scramble for a first down with no time left in a playoff game with no timeouts left. And the clock ran out. So maybe Dak needs to try to come back from that head injury next year that apparently he had this year, because he clearly wasn't right this year. He can try again next year. No, I'm going to give our Comeback Player of the Year award this year to Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow. It's kind of weird, but in his rookie season, he had his knee blown out for him. That was in November. So he missed half of his rookie year. Then he comes back for his second year. A lot of times, a season that people say is the toughest for NFL quarterbacks, because now everybody has film on you. Everybody has the book on you. What do we take away? What do we not let him do now that we kind of know who he is? And all Joe Burrow did this year was lead the Cincinnati Bengals to a Super Bowl. On the season, Joe Burrow completed over 70% of his passes for over 4,600 yards and 34 touchdowns. Also, he did not scramble with no timeouts. So Joe Burrow wins our Comeback Player of the Year. Okay, we are now at one of the biggest awards we will hand out this year. Who was the 2021 NFL Most Valuable Player? And there are a ton of options. Burrow, Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, Bills quarterback Josh Allen. What about the Rams with Cooper Kupp or Aaron Donald, or I guess even Matthew Stafford? I would consider Deebo Samuel with the 49ers for MVP. Here is my problem with all these candidates. If you take any of these candidates off their team probably is still at least competitive. However, if we remove Aaron Rodgers from the Green Bay Packers, I seriously believe the Packers are battling for top five draft pick. They're that bad. I realize Rodgers and the Packers came up short again in the playoffs this year, but that doesn't change the fact that Aaron Rodgers is carrying that franchise every year. And by the way, I know there are a lot of people mad at Rodgers for his whole stance with vaccines and everything. There are even some NFL voters that refuse to vote for Aaron for MVP because of his vaccine stance. I mean, I think that stuff is kind of separate, but let me say this. If you are more upset at Aaron Rodgers for his stance about vaccines than you are about the situation with Houston Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson, it might be time to think about your priorities. Because that's a little bit weird, is all I'm saying. Think of those two things. That's a little bit weird. Aaron Rodgers wins our Daily Dose MVP. But on the other side, who could be our least valuable player of the year? And I know your first thought. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, it's got to be Bengals cornerback Eli Apple. That dude was burnt to a crisp all season. And I completely understand that way of thinking. Here's my problem. I think Eli Apple is a okay player. The problem for him, he talks too much junk for only being an okay player. He needs to shut up. He needs to be quiet. He needs to learn to get better at his trade. So I have to give the least valuable player to another popular player. And it isn't actually for his play on the field. When he is actually on the field, he does tend to produce at least a little bit. This year, this guy averaged 6 catches per game, 13 yards per catch. He had 4 touchdowns. I mean, he did something. But please tell me that Antonio Brown's on-field production makes up for his off-the-field nonsense. Think about his career. Dude has now tried to scuttle the Pittsburgh Steelers. He refused to play for the Raiders because he didn't like his helmet. Then he tried to freeze his feet off. He was cut by the New England Patriots amid sexual assault allegations. Then he quit the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this season mid-game on the field, throwing his equipment into the stands. Now, we can go into the, well, he said I was cut. Well, he said I was benched. Well, he said I was this. He said I was that. But the fact is this. However he left, Antonio Brown left the Buccaneers in a really, really bad spot. Because remember, teammate Chris Godwin was already out with an injury. He was gone for the year. They needed Antonio Brown to step up for them to have a chance to really maybe take a shot at going to the Super Bowl. Instead, Antonio Brown quits. And what happens to Tampa? They were beaten at home by the Rams in a tight playoff game. They definitely could have used a little more offensive help. But instead, Antonio Brown went on his own weird agenda thing. Antonio Brown somehow managed to send Tom Brady to retirement with a postseason loss. I never thought we'd see that happen. He is, no question, the least valuable player in the NFL to me. And I'll tell you this right now. I keep saying it every time it happens. And it happens again. If your team signs him, your team deserves exactly what they get. And I'll bet someone out there will sign him again. And when they do, don't be surprised. It's coming. We all know it's coming. Don't be surprised because you will deserve exactly what you get. So when we look back at this season, what do you remember? You'll remember the Rams beating the Bengals. We'll remember the Bengals beating the Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City, down big, came back and got the win. I will remember the Manning cast because the Manning cast to me made Monday Night Football way more interesting. With Peyton Manning and Eli Manning having their guests on during live broadcasts, explaining what they're seeing, telling stories, I thought the Manning cast this year was phenomenal. I will remember that we are seeing more of that old guard at quarterback move on and retire. Last year, remember, Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, they joined Andrew Luck in retirement. This year, we get Ben Roethlisberger, we get Tom Brady, they hang it up. Hey, we are on to a new era in the NFL, and I'll be honest, it looks pretty bright. We've got some good, young, talented quarterbacks in the league right now. I will remember Houston Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson sitting out all year. That's still kind of weird, isn't it? 22 different women have filed sexual assault lawsuits against Deshaun Watson, stating he came to them for a professional massage, then asked for inappropriate things, and then did inappropriate things. And he is now in court because of it. I will also remember that this story about Deshaun Watson really isn't getting all that much attention. No one really talks about it. We're too worried talking about whether or not Aaron Rodgers or Cole Beasley got their shot. And again, it's kind of disturbing when you think about it. If what these women are saying is true, and there's 22 of them, and they all kind of tell the same story, even though they don't have any link to each other, it's kind of disturbing that we talked more about Aaron Rodgers and Cole Beasley than we did about what apparently Deshaun Watson was doing, isn't it? I will remember Jacksonville Jaguars head coach Urban Meyer crashing and burning in spectacular fashion. Hey, Urban Meyer is yet another example of a coach that just had too big of an ego, and it bit him. Like Nick Saban, like Steve Spurrier, Meyer thought he can just jump into the NFL and win like he had always done in college. But these guys don't want to admit that the NFL is a different world. The players don't have to listen to you. You can't kick them. And then when you lose, you can't fly on a separate plane. You can't get caught with some bar skank grinding on you. Hey, story as old as time, people. Guy thinks he's an NFL coach. Guy kicks a player. Guy has some bar skank grinding on him. Guy gets fired from the NFL and is never seen in the NFL again. If I've heard that story once, I've heard it 1,000 times. Finally, I will also remember the lawsuit of Brian Flores saying that he was fired wrongly and that teams wouldn't hire him because of his race. Now, I don't give Flores much of a shot on that lawsuit. I think if there was any wrongdoing, it's going to be really, really difficult for him to prove. But it was announced over the weekend, Brian Flores is actually going to be joining the Pittsburgh Steelers coaching staff as a senior defensive assistant linebackers coach. And for that, I actually give Brian Flores a lot of credit. Because to take that job, which we know is beneath him, I mean, he was a head coach, but to take that job, you have to put your ego aside. You have to take a step back. He had to take a lesser job. But remember this, Brian Flores is doing something Colin Kaepernick would not do. He took a lesser job. And he has a job because of it. Hey, his lawsuit is still on. I'm betting it goes nowhere. But at least he didn't make himself a martyr for this cause and completely destroy his career. He's not an old guy. Now, like I said, is this new job beneath him? Yeah, it probably is. But remember, he was less than a 500 coach in Miami. You don't always get to call your shots when you haven't proven you can win as a head coach. There are tons and tons of people who have gone the same route. They tried it as head coach. They didn't do that well. They got fired. They had to take a lesser spot. We will see if Brian Flores is able to work some more and get back to that job status yet again. Hey, the 2021 NFL season was memorable for so many reasons. I am just hoping that next year we have more of the same. Parity is still going to be there. We're going to get a new influx of new players. We're going to have some different teams. We're going to have some more surprises. And I am hoping this next era, this next generation of NFL quarterbacks turns out to be as great as they're starting to look right now. We have what could be another really, really fun era kind of beginning in the NFL. Okay, coming back, we still need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Yes, the 2021 NFL season is now over. And like we talked about, it is also the end of an era in quarterbacks. Well, we now have a new batch of talented young quarterbacks taking over. Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow. That is going to be the group winning the next era of Super Bowl titles, right? Well, we'll just have to wait and see. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, somehow, and I don't even fully understand how, young Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow led the Bengals all the way to the Super Bowl this year. In just his second season, Burrow has already done what only two other quarterbacks in that franchise's history have done. Joey B is now in the company of Kenny Anderson, who, by the way, should be an NFL Hall of Famer. What he did with the Bengals is nothing short of incredible. And he's also in the company of one Boomer Esiason. Now, Esiason is not exactly in that Hall of Fame class, but he was very good and he was insanely tough. Unfortunately, like Kenny Anderson and like Boomer Esiason, Joe Burrow's Super Bowl ended in an almost win. Like they were close, but they didn't quite come up with the victory. But you know, Burrow isn't the first young quarterback to go all the way to the Super Bowl and then come up short. I mean, big deal. So he didn't win it all this year. He's just going to go back again, right? Well, not so fast. Because here's the thing. It isn't easy to get to the Super Bowl. It's really, really tough. Every single team out there is trying to make it to the Super Bowl. But it's even tougher when you look at what you have to face year in and year out. I mean, you look at the AFC right now. You've got Josh Allen. You've got Patrick Mahomes. You've got Justin Herbert. You've got Lamar Jackson. Plus, there are some really good teams. I mean, you think of teams like the Tennessee Titans. They're really good. They just need a good quarterback. And they'd be right there contending too. Well, today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is counting down 5 very good quarterbacks that got to a Super Bowl and lost. And we all thought, okay, well, who cares? They're going to get back. But they never did make it back. And we're hoping that's not the case for one Joe Burrow. Let's go ahead and jump in. We start off at number 5. With a guy that changed NFL history. But maybe not quite in the way that he had hoped he would change NFL history. This guy was drafted by the New England Patriots with the first overall pick back in 1993. He had it all. He was big. He was strong. He was smart. He could make all of the throws. He had a pretty good surrounding cast. In just his 4th NFL season, he led the Patriots to the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, when they got there, they were beaten by the Green Bay Packers. This was Super Bowl 31. But I mean, big deal. Quarterback Drew Bledsoe, he's only 24 years old. He's going to go back, probably multiple times. Drew Bledsoe was the youngest player in NFL history to actually be elected to a Pro Bowl. He had a good team. He had a good coach. And yet, that wasn't how his career would go. Drew Bledsoe was always good, just not quite great. And in 2001, he suffered a brutal hit and had a really, really bad injury. And in relief, the New England Patriots would send in a young, unknown quarterback by the name of Tom Brady. And of course, Brady would go on to win all kinds of Super Bowls with Drew Bledsoe as his backup. Now, Bledsoe would eventually leave. He would go to Buffalo. He would later go to Dallas. But after that first Super Bowl, Drew Bledsoe never reached those same heights again. And for that, today he comes in at number 5. We arrive next at number 4. And we reach a quarterback that came into the league again with a lot of fanfare. But it took a little while for him to kind of take over. But 4 years in, he took the league by storm. He carried his team all the way to the Super Bowl. He had won the Heisman Trophy in college and was selected with the number 1 pick of the 2011 NFL Draft. This guy was so big. He was so strong. And sometimes he could throw it accurately, just not all the time. But you had to account for him on every single play. In 2015, Cam Newton led the Carolina Panthers to Super Bowl 50. He had been named the league's MVP that year. The Panthers had racked up a 15-1 record, and Cam Newton had accounted for 45 touchdowns passing and running. But then in the Super Bowl, he was kind of terrorized by that Denver Broncos defense. Pass rusher Von Miller had a field day, and the Broncos beat Newton and the Panthers in Super Bowl 50. And honestly, since that game, and maybe even going to the next year and that opener against the Broncos, Cam Newton was never the same again. He had taken so many big hits. He had taken big hits to his head. And he had an injured shoulder. He couldn't throw the ball very far. He couldn't throw the ball very accurately. Cam has played a little bit in the last few seasons, but he's been largely below average. And even though he has yelled at us, he's back, what has been back is basically poor quarterback play. It certainly doesn't look like Cam Newton is ever going to get a chance to get back to another Super Bowl. And for that reason, Cam Newton comes in today at number 4. Next up, we reach number 3. And we get to a guy that has racked up some incredible passing statistics in his career. Get this. In his career, this guy has passed for nearly 60,000 yards and 367 touchdowns. That is amazing in any era. Drafted with the 3rd overall pick of the 2008 NFL Draft, it took Matt Ryan a little bit of time to get the Atlanta Falcons to a Super Bowl level. But then they did. In infamous fashion, unfortunately. In 2016, Matt Ryan led the Atlanta Falcons to Super Bowl 51 against the New England Patriots. And hey, let's not forget, Matt Ryan was pretty good in that game. For a while. I mean, the Falcons led the game 28-3 in the second half, but then they couldn't get any points. They couldn't get any first downs when they needed them. And the New England Patriots came back to win the game 34-28. Well, I mean, even though Matt Ryan had been in the league a few years, he was only 31 in that Super Bowl. He could get the Falcons back to another Super Bowl, right? Yeah, it hasn't happened. In fact, since 2016, the Atlanta Falcons are just 35-46. And honestly, when you watch them, they don't show any signs of being a Super Bowl contender anytime soon. See, here's the thing that we forget so much in football, because we love to heap that praise on the quarterback. We love to give that quarterback all the credit. But there are 21 other guys out there playing. It's not just them, winning or losing. It's not just them. Matt Ryan hasn't gotten the Falcons back to the Super Bowl since. He got them there once, but he didn't win it. And for that, Matt Ryan comes in today on our list at number 3. At number 2, we have a guy that took a lot of heat from his hometown fans. Now, some of that was because at times he could be a little bit inconsistent. And also some of that is because all the time, his fan base is a bunch of crazy people. But this guy did produce, and he produced in the postseason, which is really, really important. Our number 2 entry has won 9 playoff games. He took his team to the playoffs 7 of the 8 years that he started more than 10 games. He won at least 1 playoff game 6 of those 8 years, and he reached the NFC Championship game 5 different times. Do you realize that every eligible quarterback who's won at least 9 postseason games is already enshrined in Canton? Now, this guy was drafted number 2 overall in 1999 by the Philadelphia Eagles, but Donovan McNabb was a starter for 10 seasons. And in that time, he averaged 9 wins and just 4.5 losses. Keep this in mind. During that decade, only Peyton Manning, Brett Favre, and Tom Brady won more games than Donovan McNabb did. Now, it wasn't like those Eagles teams were just stocked with talent, especially on offense. I mean, he only had Terrell Owens for like a year and a half. And the rest of the time, he was throwing to guys named like Todd Pinkston and Reggie Brown and James Thrash. But somehow in 2004, when Donovan McNabb was only 28 years old, he took the Eagles to the Super Bowl. They were beaten by Tom Brady and those New England Patriots. Again, he's going to get back, right? Well, it wasn't that easy. I mean, in the NFC at the time, McNabb had to battle Eli Manning, Kurt Warner, Brad Johnson and a really good Tampa defense, Jake Delhomme and the Carolina Panthers, Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. He made it to the Bowl one time, and Donovan McNabb lost, and he never made it back again. And Donovan McNabb comes in today at number 2. So we reach our number 1 quarterback that made it to the Super Bowl, then lost, and never made it back. And we get to a quarterback that, despite the fact he didn't win the Super Bowl, I would still put him in the conversation for greatest quarterbacks ever. Why? Because I have eyes, my friends. I have eyes. He wasn't drafted in 1983 by the Miami Dolphins until the 27th pick. But remember, that was in what is widely considered the greatest quarterback draft class ever. But right off the bat, you could tell Dan Marino is special. He was so good. He had that quick delivery. He had a very, very sharp mind. He had a bigger arm than I think anyone ever gives him credit for. In just his second season, Dan Marino began rewriting the record book. In 1984, his second year in the league, Dan Marino threw for over 5,000 yards and 48 touchdowns. Remember, that wasn't in this 7-on-7 era. That was back in the era of no defensive holding, hitting the quarterbacks low is not illegal, hitting wide receivers pretty much anywhere you wanted wasn't illegal. Do whatever you want. The defense had free rein. But in just year 2, Dan Marino led the Dolphins to Super Bowl 19 against the San Francisco 49ers. Montana versus Marino? This is going to be incredible! Except Marino really didn't have that great of a surrounding cast. After jumping out to an early lead in Super Bowl 19, the Miami Dolphins would get crushed by the Niners 38-16. And at the time, we all thought what we're thinking right now with Joe Burrow. I mean, who cares? Dan Marino was only 23 years old. That's 2 years younger than Joe Burrow is now. Dan Marino is going to go to a ton of Super Bowls. He's probably going to win a couple. Except he never got back. The Miami Dolphins made it to the postseason 8 more times under Marino. They even advanced to the AFC Championship game twice. But Marino was beaten once by Tony Eason and once by Jim Kelly. Hey, it is hard to get to a Super Bowl. Every single team in the NFL starts off their season with the same goal. Get to the Super Bowl. Get to the Super Bowl. We want to win the Super Bowl. We all want to do it. Everybody wants to do it. And they are the best of the best of the best of the best. When you think about it, if you're in a loaded conference like Joe Burrow is now, with all those great quarterbacks, I mean, what separates your team? What makes you that much better? It is so difficult. I know that right now, after this 2021 NFL season, we're all kind of penciling in Joe Burrow for a few more shots at the title, and hopefully that happens, because I really like that kid. He is really, really fun to watch. I love the way he carries himself. But as our Daily Dose Top 5 shows today, it is not that easy at all. Hey, next week on The Dose, the NFL season is over. Don't get me wrong, it's not like we're just going to keep talking NFL even in the offseason, but we might have to take a look at some of the things that are coming for the league and some of the things that are coming during this offseason period. Trust me, there are some things of interest to keep in mind. Plus, we might have a few things to watch for in that NFL offseason, and the NBA is rolling along. College hoops is heating up. There are a number of things to talk about here on The Dose, so be sure to stop by The Daily Dose, and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going on over there every week. But more than anything else, thank you so much for sharing the show. We absolutely love it when you do that. I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Hey, in case you haven't noticed, and judging by the attendance, you haven't.